Well, good evening, gentlemen. I am Monsignor Pope, in case you don't know who I am. I was asked to speak tonight on pride and humility. And I'm an expert on one and a rookie in the other. I'll admit it's the pride that I'm the expert in and humility that I'm kind of a rank amateur. But because we do need God's help both to listen and to speak, then let's all pray. Lord, we come before you tonight aware that you are the giver of every good and perfect gift. And so we ask tonight, Lord, for that perfect gift of ears that are open to hear what you need to say to all of us, this speaker included, and that we'll have the humility then to accept what you teach us and where we need to change, in Jesus' name, amen. All right. Well, I thought, you know, certainly when we preach on pride and humility, I'm going to use basically the Thomistic synthesis on pride, and it's interesting because Thomas doesn't really have in the Summa a section on sin. If you try to go to the Summa Theologica, his main work, you're going to look for sin and you're not going to find it. Because what Thomas does is he preaches virtues. There's a whole section on virtue. And in so doing, he's really following the tradition of both the fathers of the church and the New Testament, which emphasizes virtue. And then where sin comes in the Summa, is a virtue is announced, and then to either side, by excess or defect, there is sin. So there are excesses of virtues or defects of virtues. And sometimes people say to me, well, how could there be an excess of virtue? Well, again, let's just take one that might be more easy to figure it out, like fortitude, courage. You know, certainly the excess of, the defect of courage is obviously enough. Cowardliness, small-mindedness, pusillanimity, as it's often called, where we cringe and we're afraid and so on. So that would be a defect of fortitude or courage. But there's an excess of it too, which is when one just brashly goes into every battle and is rash and just, you know, just goes without any rationality into foolish things, you see, in foolish battles. And so that would be an excess, you see, and we tend to call it rashness. So that's just an example. So in the Summa, you look up pride and you're going to find it tucked under a virtue called temperance. Thomas, the basic virtues that Thomas talked about in the Summa would be the first of all the theological virtues, faith, hope, and charity, and then prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. And temperance is that virtue that helps us to moderate, or if you will, particularly the passions, and also by extension our intellect. So with that in mind, pride then is a violation of temperance. So Thomas then speaks of pride in this particular way. He says, pride is the habit or the vice that disposes us to think more of ourselves than we are. And he says elsewhere, it is the inordinate esteem for our own excellence. Now, sometimes this sin, in fact, frequently this sin is committed in weakness. Sometimes we don't even know we're being prideful. That's how deep it is. It's such a deep drive that we don't even know half the time how prideful we are, you know. We just think we know better than everybody else, you know. And we got a few ideas, and if only people would listen to us, you know. And, you know, gentlemen, I'll just say to that, don't believe everything you think. We sometimes think that something's just true because we think so. And based on little else than that. And that's a form of pride. It's intellectual pride, but it's pride. And yet it's almost so automatic and reflexive that we hardly even know we're doing it half the time. Now, we're not called to walk around in the vein, well, who's to say, shucks, I don't know. That is not temperance either. And we'll, when we talk about humility, we'll see that humility isn't, aw, shucks, I'm just got nothing to say, I'm just nothing. That's not true. Humility is reverence for the truth about myself. And the truth is that you and I have gifts. but they are gifts. All right? And they came to us from God, and usually through somebody else. I did not teach myself to read. I did not teach myself almost anything I know. I depended on others to teach and instruct and wake up the gifts that God gave me, and ultimately God gave them. If I have gifts, great, but they are gifts. So we'll talk more about humility after the break, but again, pride is an inordinate esteem for myself. Now, inordinate means it's out of balance, it's intemperate, it's not in proper balance, see? So again, we have, therefore, there's sort of that passive form of pride. And the more active form of pride, which is it's manifest more often in things like defiance or arrogance. You know, I will not be told what to do, see. I will not be under lawful authority. I will not be told what to think. And ultimately, of course, Adam and Eve committed that sin in the garden. They said, I will decide what I want to do, and I will decide whether it's right and wrong. I will not be told by God what to do. Now, for example, why do you say that, Father? Well, listen. God said, stay away from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, that word knowledge, you've got to understand in the Bible, almost never means simple intellectual knowing. Knowledge in the Bible usually has a very heavy experiential quality. So there's two ways you can know something. You can know something because somebody else told you, and you trust them. Or you can know something by experience. Now, as a general rule, it's a good thing to know something by experience. However, when it comes to evil, that is never the case. And so God says, I don't want you to know evil, to experience it. I want you to just know what's good and what's evil because you trust me and I tell you. And Adam and Eve, in effect, jettison that, and they say, I need to know for myself. I need to know my experience. I'm not going to trust you. And Satan, of course, tempted them that way. Why are you trusting him? He's holding something back. He knows that if you eat that fruit, you'll be like gods. And then you'll tell him what to do. Adam and Eve said, You mean I don't have to be under his authority? And I can decide, I can do what I want to do, and I will decide whether it's right and wrong? Sure. And so they sinned. And you see how that's a colossal sin of pride. It's also a colossal sin because they don't trust God. It's also a sin of ingratitude because God had given them everything and only asked one thing. And even that they wouldn't accept. They threw away gratitude. They threw away trust in their Creator. You're not telling me the whole story. I need to find out for myself and verify. They're not trusting him. And then finally, they're committing a colossal sin of pride because in effect they are saying, I will not be told what to do. I will do what I want to do, and I will decide whether it is right or wrong. And so sin is pride is the primordial sin. It's that one sin that has really deep roots in our heart and our soul. And it isn't just a human problem. It's a people problem. Now, what do I mean by that? Angels are people too. Angels are persons. We often think we equate person with human person, but remember, there's three persons in the Trinity, and every angel is also a person. So angelic persons. Now, just if you want the definition of person, it's from Boethius, it's an individual substance of a rational nature. So angels qualify. They're individuals, they have a rational nature, and they are a substance. Now, angels and men both have this terrible problem. The fallen angels, that's what brought them down. Pride. Pride. I will not serve. I will not be under God's authority. And so they rebelled, and St. Michael cast the rebellious angels out of heaven. And now you see that all the fallen angels, the demons who roam this earth, their most fundamental sin is pride. Some of the other sins they can't even commit because they don't even have bodies. Right? They can't commit sins of intemperance in the sense of the way we usually use the term, and so on. Other sins of passion that involve the body and lust and so on do not pertain to angels. But angels' fundamental sin is a colossal pride, the fallen angels, that is, the demons. Now, the good angels made their decision once for all to serve and love God. Praise the Lord. So this fallen angel, Satan, draws us into his problem. He was prideful, and he knew he could tempt us to pride, because we too, having free will, we too could be drawn into that. And he drew us right into it. And ever since that time, our biggest wound, gentlemen, is pride. 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 So serious is pride. As St. Thomas says in the Summa, so serious is pride that in order to remedy it, God actually permits other sins to be the remedy for pride. That's how serious it is. It's usually sins of intemperance, that sins of the flesh, if you will, that are the most common remedy that God permits for pride, such as drinking problems or problems with sexuality and so on. Particularly problems with sexuality, because they cause a great deal of shame. No matter how enlightened this world wants to say and how sexually liberated they are, they're not. There's a great deal of shame associated with pride. Now, God doesn't cause these sins, but he permits, if you will, so serious is pride, that God would actually permit that we fall into other sins to remedy pride. Now, only saints can talk like that. That's dangerous, right? But that's what St. Thomas says twice in the Summa. He mentions this. So we're dealing with a primordial sin. We're dealing with the most fundamental, the most serious problem that we have. Because somehow in every sin we commit, pride is at the heart of it. So I want to just give you, if you will, I've already started the first section here. But here's the basic outline that I've been following. First of all, right now, we're talking about some definitions of pride. Secondly, I want to make a few distinctions about pride. Thirdly, point out again some special dangers regarding pride. And then fourthly, just bring it all together and just speak of sin as the disease of pride. So first of all, we've already pretty well set forth the definition of pride. Pride is an inordinate esteem for our own excellence, whether it be intellectual or physical or, you know, creative, whatever we think our excellence is, but it's inordinate. That's to say, it's out of balance. Secondly, we might just define it as a habit, namely a vice, a bad habit, that disposes us to think more of ourselves than we are. Okay? We think that we're so great, and we think that we're somehow on par with God or the angels or even other human beings who, at least in certain areas, we all have equal dignity, but some are just more gifted than I am in areas. And even in the area I think I'm most gifted in, there's going to be somebody out there who's better at me than it, you know? And so again, pride, though, is this sort of this inordinate and this foolish and bad habit that tends to make us think that we're more excellent and more wonderful than we are. Now, on one hand, it is a special vice. It's just a sin in itself. Pride is just itself a sin. However, it's also a general vice because, as I've already said to you, it's involved directly or indirectly in most of the sins that we commit, particularly sins of malice. Now, what do I mean by malice? There's two types of sins: sins that are committed in weakness and sins that are committed in malice. We mean to do a bad thing. We don't just fall through weakness. Sometimes we get angry and we just say something miserable. That's a sin of weakness. But when I go to somebody planning to harm them and hurt them or destroy their reputation or bring them down by biting words, that's a sin of malice. See? So you see that there are some sins that we commit out of weakness. And they do manifest some degree of pride, but particularly sins of malice. I know it's wrong, but I will do it anyway because you deserve it, or I have a right to do it, or no one will tell me what to do. So sin is most manifest in what we call the sins of malice. All right? Are we clear in that distinction, malice versus weakness? All right? Now, again, pride was the devil's sin. Pride always says, my will be done. My will be done. That's pride. Humility says to the Lord, thy will be done. And pride excludes not only God, but my neighbor. So the first sin of pride, of course, is against God. But there's also many sins that we commit against our neighbor because of pride. I've already kind of given you some examples, but just a simple refusal to accept help from somebody or advice or rebuke. We all need correction. We need reproof. We need help. We need instruction. So the refusal to do that or to receive that is part of the way we pridefully sin against each other. Another example is when we just, again, for just ugly reasons, we dismiss others' gifts. We refuse to admit that they have them, or that just that somebody might just be better at something than I am. And so one of the ugliest sins that come from pride in that regard is envy. And I may have given you this distinction in another time I've been here, but envy is very different than jealousy. Jealousy is you have something I want, and I might do something wrong to get it. So jealousy can and often is a sin. However, the Bible does say God is jealous, right? But envy is very different. Envy, see, again, jealousy, you've got something good that I want. But envy is there's something good in you that I want to destroy because it makes me look bad by comparison. That's envy. And St. Augustine calls envy the diabolical sin. The diabolical sin. Because it doesn't just seek to possess the good, it seeks to destroy the good. And that is deeply rooted in an next to pride, because something of your excellence, your gift, makes me look bad by comparison. Now, if I see a gift in you, there are two things I should do of a good nature. One would be to say, could you teach me to do that? There may be some gifts you have that I can learn and imitate. Or by the other possibility, again, we call that zeal, by the way, zeal. And the other one is there may be gifts you have that I'll never have. You know, I don't know. Maybe some of you are very good at math. I'm not good at it. Or maybe someone here is very, very good at a musical instrument that I'll never learn to play. But so in that case, I just take joy in your gift. And I'm glad you got it. And I'm enriched by it. So when you see a gift in another person, the good response is either joy or zeal. But envy says, no, your gift annoys me because I'm not the center of the attention. You look better at something than I am. I want now to denigrate your gift, if possible destroy it, but do something that ruins your reputation. It goes all the way back to the playground, doesn't it? There was always these kids in the front row that get straight A's no matter what, huh? And on the playground, we'd just call it and say, hey, you know, you're making us look bad. You teacher's pet, we'd mock them and laugh at them, ridicule them, throw stuff at spit wads at them during school. We'd ridicule them. And if they really kept making us look bad, we'd rough them up on the playground, give them a bloody nose, tell them who's boss. That's envy. It's ugly. See? So I'm just trying to show you that there are a lot of sins that have their root really in pride, but they come down to us in other words. But every sin somehow is rooted in a kind of a pride that not only excludes God, but pride that can exclude neighbors. And so I've given you some examples of how we do that. Now, let's make a few distinctions now about pride. First of all, the pagan philosophers like Aristotle, Socrates, and so on, they spoke of pride as a virtue because they defined it differently, all right? So again, we need to be careful to see that they're working with a little bit of a different definition. They're not just, messed up, okay? So the pagan philosophers often thought of pride as being a very good thing. So because we want through pride to do things well. For pride in terms of the virtue, aspires to things. It tends to and desires not merely ordinary things, but loftier things. Things that involve some difficulty, and things that involve pride. Pride, in this certain sense, pushes a man to be more than he currently is, right? Pushes you. You can do better. You can be better. Work for it. Strive for it. Look for excellence, you see? And that's, it inspires us. It drives effort. And as such, pride resides in the will. So again, there can be, and we do sometimes in English use the word pride in that way, right? Come on, take some pride in your work. Come on, have some pride in being an American. Or, you know, we talk about pride in that way, right? So again, but in the strict sense, the Christian tradition defines pride as a sin, whereas the more colloquial tradition and the pagan tradition would include a sense of pride that was virtuous. Now, by the way, just so you know, that in the Christian tradition, all those virtues I was just talking about that they were calling pride, we relate to two other gifts, two other virtues, fortitude and hope. So all that list of things that tends to help us to aspire, to strive for greater things, even if they're hard, we work for them, we want excellence. Those types of attitudes in the Christian moral tradition we ascribe to fortitude or courage and to hope. Okay, so that's where we would put those things. But in the ancient pagan tradition, they included pride as a virtue that would do those things. We almost strictly define pride only in the negative sense, all right? Although in modern American English, we sometimes use pride in both the pagan sense and in the Christian sense. Are we clear on that? So that's one distinction I want to make about pride. Secondly, this is a use of a word, this use of the word is, I've already made that point, so let me just move on. The other thing I want to say about pride is not the same as vanity. Vanity actually shows a little bit of humility. It's kind of an odd thing, but vanity shows a little bit of humility because by it, I think I need your admiration. In other words, I'm kind of vainglorious and want to look good in your eyes. I mean, there's something I need from you, you see. I want to look good in your eyes. And there's a strange, twisted kind of humility in that, see. So we don't want to simply equate pride with vanity, right? Likewise, pride is not the same as pleasure at being praised, for the same reason. We like to be praised by others. Now, come on, man. One of the first things that most of us need, and it's called the father wound. We really need our father to be happy and pleased with us and proud of us, see? And so again, even there, although that can go off and become sinful and excessive, of itself, there's something that I need from somebody else, and I recognize that, and I seek it. So again, simply, if you will, needing, if you will, praise is not of itself pride, okay? And then one other quick distinction. Pride is really more about a lust of power and being subject to no one. Okay? That's where pride is in full blossom. Now, St. Gregory the Great distinguished pride in four basic ways, all right? Just while we're making some distinction. The first form of pride is thinking that my good is from myself. I am the self-made man. I pulled myself up from my own bootstraps. Whatever that means. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You did no such thing. You are not the self-made man. I think you're a contingent being. And you first of all needed your parents to exist so that you can exist, and you needed your existence from God. So, oh yeah, but since that time I'm the self-made man. No, somebody had to change your diapers. Somebody had to feed you. Somebody had to teach you how to read and write. Somebody had to discipline you. Oh yeah, but then after that I'm the self-made man. Oh yeah, well, somebody had to put you through school. Somebody had to teach you a few things. Well, yeah, but after that, I'm the self-made man. All right, nope. So you see, you still had to probably learn skills and so. Oh, no, I run my own business. I'm an entrepreneur. Oh, so you mean to tell me you don't need customers? Oh, well, what do you mean? I earn those customers? No, you need them. Do you create the electricity that runs your shop? You entrepreneur, you're the self-made man. You don't need to make your own you make your own electricity? Well, no, I pay for that. Well, I know, but somebody's out there, you know, in the coal mines. Somebody ran the power lines. You know? How did you get to work today? Well, I drove here. Well, somebody made that truck. Somebody paved those roads and maintains them. You see what I'm saying? The idea that I'm the self-made man is a foolish, foolish understanding. Now, I'm not saying the opposite extreme, that we need to depend on everybody for everything, but you get the idea. We are our life is very intertwined with other people, and we need them, see? And we're foolish to think we don't. So the first form of pride that Gregory announces is this form of pride that thinks that my goodness or my excellence is simply from myself. No, it isn't. It is no such thing. Secondly, a second form of pride might be, I might admit that the good is from God, but still is the result of my own merit. I'm blessed because I'm better. I was less sinful than that other person, so that's why and so on. And again, I think, forget the utter gratitude of God, and that God very often gives gifts. We know we don't deserve almost any gift we've got. Somebody says to you, how you feeling today? How you doing today? You know a good answer? I'm pretty well blessed for a sinner. I am pretty well blessed for a sinner, you know? And you are. None of us deserve anything but utter hell for the headaches that we give God all day long. The honest truth is, you're hard to love. Yes, you are. You're not talking about me. I said, yeah, I'm talking about you. I'm in the same boat with you. You know, God said one day to Jeremiah, I'm sending you to these people, Jeremiah. I'm sending you to preach to them. But I want you to know something about them, Jeremiah. They have necks of iron and foreheads of brass. Yeah, that's us he's talking about. And you think you're going to earn a gift from God? We're nothing but blind, pitiable, poor, and naked before God. You can't even cause the next beat of your heart, let alone merit something, right? Now, we do have a concept of merit. I don't have time to develop it. It's called condign merit, and it's really fundamentally still God's gift to us. St. Augustine says, so great is God's love for us that he allows his gifts to become our merits. But they're all still his gifts. So, beautiful end of the story. Have you ever read anyone ever read The Diary of a Country Preacher? Beautiful work. If you ever get a chance to read, it's called The Diary of a Country Preacher. The very last line in the book, all is grace. Beautiful way to end that book. Just all is grace. So again, the first form of pride, thinking that my good is from myself. Secondly, it's not from me, it's from God, but God gave it to me because I'm somehow a bit above somebody else. All right? Number three, another form of pride, the third form of pride, is to claim an excellence that we do not, in fact, possess. Okay? We're exaggerating our skills, or we're claiming something for ourselves that is not, in fact, something we have. And a fourth form of it is despising others and wishing to be the only one who has the gifts. And that's what I explained to you earlier about what we call envy. Envy. All right. So we define pride as an inordinate esteem of oneself. And we made a few distinctions about pride, that it's not necessarily the same as vanity, nor is it the same as pleasure of being praised. But it's really about power and not being subject to anyone. And then we looked at four basic forms of pride, right? I just listed them. Now, some dangers about pride. Well, of course, pride is the chief danger, isn't it, right? But let's specify, though, some particular forms of danger. Since pride involves a sense of self-sufficiency, it omits or discounts God in considering who and what we are. As such, then, it can be a very serious mortal sin in that way, right? Who needs God? I'm sufficient. I'll take care of this. You know, all your God myths and stuff. I can handle this. See? And in that sense, it could become a mortal sin, right? Now, on the other hand, as I've said to you before, frequently, though, it's not a mortal sin because that would require a conscious and fully willed dismissing of God. However, more often than this dismissal of God becomes more of a, it's more often a venial sin, but it's just that it's manifest more passively in that we don't really ask God for help. You know, we'll talk to the doctor, we'll go to the lawyer, we'll go everywhere, and then eventually we'll finally get around to asking God, but God is just not on our radar. We just keep thinking, well, I need to pay and get some money, and if I just get enough resources, I'll be fine. No, you won't. You are going to die. You need God from the day one to the day you die, you are not going to be able to make it. And whatever illusions you may have about what your money will get you, or your power, or your good looks, or your access, or any of that stuff, sorry. See, but what happens is we get swept away with that sort of illusion of control, that illusion of self-sufficiency. And I would say generally it's a kind of a forgetfulness. But it's rooted in pride, because I'm focused more on myself and what I've got and my efforts and what I'm doing, and God's sort of off in the distance. And that is a form of pride. But I would say that it's probably not generally a mortal sin. It would become mortal if a person said, "Who needs God? Who needs God? You crazy Christians and your belief in God, grow up." See, that's when it becomes mortal, see. There's a beautiful proverb that says, "Lord, give me neither poverty nor riches, lest in my poverty I steal, or in my riches I say, who is the Lord?" See? Riches and power and wealth can lead us to a very strong denial of the need for God in our life. Brethren, it's an illusion. Whatever this world gives you is taking every bit of it back, and it's going to assign you a stone-cold tomb. It's a cruel joke. Whatever you think you've amassed, you're not taking any of it with you. This world will not let you take anything with you. It will assign you a stone-cold tomb, and it's done with you. Okay? Now, so the first danger of pride is that we push God to the periphery of our life. The second danger of sin is that pride can involve a direct turning away from God, and in that case it can be mortal if it includes a contempt or a strong refusal to be subject to God. So in this sense, pride is the worst and the first of all sins. And we've already talked about that in the Garden of Eden. I will not be told what to do by you. See? I will decide. And God said, okay, it's all yours. But again, I won't develop that any further. It's pretty similar to what we've been saying. But again, the main danger of pride is that whether actively or indirectly and passively, we move God to the peripheries of our life. He's not a big factor. Bigger factors for me are money, power, good looks, sex, popularity, access, pleasures of the world. And God, you're invited too, but I'll see you on Sunday. I'm too busy right now. See, and that's the both active and passive problem of pride. Now, again, I already said this to you, but let me just reiterate it at this point. This is a very deep drive, and it's the most serious sin that we have. You see, we tend to think that perhaps other sins are the most serious. You know, people who are a little more liberal today would tend to think that greed is the most serious thing, and people who are a little more conservative would tend to think that the sexual sins are the most serious, right? No, pride is pride. I'm not saying those are not also very serious sins, but pride is the primordial sin. In fact, it's so primordial that St. Gregory doesn't even list it among the seven deadly sins, because he said it's the mother of them all. It's in all of them. He doesn't even list it as a separate sin. He lists the other, when you look at the seven deadly sins, you know, pride and greed and lust and anger and gluttony and envy and sloth, he doesn't even have pride on that list. He calls it vainglory, because pride is in every single one of those seven deadly sins, all right? It is the primordial sin. It is the most serious problem you've got, all right? And so serious, I've already said this to you, that God actually permits other sins to be the remedy for it, sins that cause us shame especially. Now, he doesn't cause those sins, but he permits them. Because in that shame may be a remedy for our colossal pride. When we just do knuckleheaded things, things we're embarrassed by, shocked by, humiliated by, you know, the stuff that makes the papers. Sometimes it's that kind of a remedy that's necessary. It's a very serious problem. We underestimate pride, see, because it's so deeply present in our life that we almost don't even notice it's there. And yet that's the primordial sin. Now, pride looks down. You'll never see God unless you look up. This is just another way of showing you how serious pride is. Pride looks down, but you're never going to see God looking that way. You've got to look up. And that's why pride is so serious. Okay, then let's just conclude with some aspects. I've already kind of laid the groundwork for this last point I want to make, that fundamentally pride is a disease that spawns every other problem, the disease of pride. So pride is really the source of every other sin, you know. I know better than you, God. I know you told me to do this, but this is an exceptional case. I know better. I can apply the law better than you can. So there's pride in that, and we see that again. There's even a worse pride in saying, I don't want to be told what to do. There's a kind of a mitigated form of this today, and I say it at every funeral. Every funeral I say, you know, I tell them they're going to die, and I ask them to get ready, and I say, if any of you are struggling with serious and unrepented sin in your life, please, I beg you, repent of it. Some people say to me, I don't even know how to get free of this, Father. I know, but at least say, Lord, I'm sinning and I know it's sin. But do not, I beg you, do not go on calling good or no big deal what God calls sin. And yet so many people are doing exactly that today. Oh, we live in an enlightened time. We know better. Or everybody else is doing it. It can't be that bad. Or any version of that you want. People are going on calling good or no big deal what God calls sin. And that is pride with a colossal P. And it is really, in a certain sense, another way of understanding the unforgivable sin. Because out of pride, I don't need to be forgiven. I have a pastor that told me there's no problem with this. And I agree with him. And that is pride. I know better than God's own word, than God's teaching. I know better. And that sin can't be forgiven because you don't want it forgiven. See? And that's what pride can do. Well, be very careful. There are a lot of people going around today. You see? And they're all talking about, you know, mercy and humility. And they don't mean any of it. They're saying, I know better than you. I know better than your church. And anyone who doesn't agree with me, they're the ones who are mean-spirited and hateful, see? And again, it's completely backwards. The humble ones are the ones saying, Lord, I can't undo what you've said. I have to share the truth. Even if it hurts or causes people a little bit of grief and pain, I've got to share it with them because, Lord, you gave it to me. And I can't just pick and choose from your word. I've got to give people the whole load of hay. And that's true for me as a priest. And it's true for you as fathers and grandfathers and uncles and teachers. You don't get to pick what sins you're going to talk about or emphasize or agree with or not. You don't get to pick the teaching. You've got to give the whole teaching. St. Paul stood before the elders at Miletus and he said to them, listen, I'm free of the blood of any of you now. Because I gave to you the whole counsel of God. I didn't hold anything back. See? The whole counsel of God. Right? Okay. So again, but the disease of pride goes on calling good or no big deal many things which God calls sin. So I'm going to wrap it up now and just say that there is also one other form of pride that I think is very common today and we should be aware of it. And it simply is this, that there is a very widespread tendency today, a modern form of pride, even among believers, to reduce God from the Holy One to a harmless hippie or to a doting grandfather. See? And the presumption is that, and too many people today are presuming that they won't ever face judgment. Or that God doesn't really care and that God basically just agrees with them. They've sort of refashioned God, into the biblical God, who does love us, but loves us enough to say, I have a perfection for you that I'm offering. Take it or leave it. See, there are too many people today that want to reduce God to just the big affirmer in the sky, to a harmless hippie or a doting grandfather. see. And that's a form of pride, because it makes God serve me rather than for me to serve God, to say, he is holy. And I need to get ready to see him. I need to be serious about my walk. Because the Bible says that nothing impure or imperfect can ever enter heaven. I have got to be humble enough to accept that I have got to be changed in order to be able to endure the glorious holiness of God. I'm not just going to walk in and say, here I am, big guy. People too often today turn God into a divine butler whose job is to sort of serve me and affirm me and just make me feel good. And I would say that that is a form of pride. You may remember that we went through a period in the church too where people say, I'm not kneeling anymore. We're just going to stand for them. I'm not kneeling anymore. See? And again, in our culture, kneeling is a sign of humility. And to refuse to kneel, and for whatever dumb reasons people were advancing, is just a sign of this kind of attitude today that, you know, God is at the periphery. The basic purpose of the liturgy is just to kind of affirm each other and talk about ourselves, and God, you're invited too. We've got to get back into the business of saying, God, you're the center of my joy. I love you, but I also respect you because you're holy. And you're my Father, and you're my Creator. And I've got to learn to listen to you and not just blow away your commandments and pick and choose what I want to believe and say that no matter what I do, you're just going to affirm me and be guilty of the sin of presumption. I've got to get humble before you. I've got to learn that you know better. And I've got to obey and listen to your teachings, even the ones that challenge me. So we've talked a lot about pride. Now in the next talk, we'll do humility, all right, which I'm not as good at talking about. but we'll look at it and just leave you again with this idea that pride is an inordinate esteem of my own excellence. It is an excessive esteem of my own goodness or excellence apart from God. And apart from others who have helped me to become who I am, it is excessive. It doesn't mean you are to have no esteem for yourself. It means that you are not to have excessive esteem. And many things start to come off the rails when we allow that to go unchecked in our life. So one day Pope Gregory was asked, what are the four basic virtues? He said, humility, 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 humility. And we'll talk about that in the next conference. Bless you for your patience.